Is recovery one size fits all? Welcome to the Therapy Brothers podcast.
I'm Brandon.
I'm Tyler.
We're brothers.
We're therapists.
And we know recovery.
Bring your stories, your questions, your successes with real recovery.
Hey, Tyler, you ready to have some hard conversations?
Let's do it.
Let the Therapy Brothers podcast begin. Hey, Tyler.
Brandon, how are you doing, man?
I'm doing good. How's life?
Life is sweet. It's good. Springtime's coming. We got some nice sunshine for the first time in a long time, and I didn't realize how much that makes a difference to my mental health.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Man.
Yeah, we need to come out of winter. I love winter and all the things it brings, but it's time.
It is time. I know that you've enjoyed your skiing this year and you kept asking for it to snow, but it's time for the flowers and the sunshine.
Yeah, we'll just pull out the mountain bike now and do it that way. So I just got to get in shape so I can climb mountains on a mountain bike. It's easier to ride a chairlift up a mountain and ski down.
Right, it's still a good workout on the legs though, and you've been in pretty good shape. You just completed a marathon not too long ago, so I don't think you have to worry about that too much.
Complete the marathon and then just fall off the wagon for months is where I'm at. So yeah, I got to get back on it.
Yeah,
you got to come ride bikes with me this year.
My doctor keeps saying, like, with my hip replacements, that the best thing I could do for myself is ride a bike, and I've been holding off on it. I've been saying it's a cost thing, but it's probably not a cost thing as much as a getting into something new and donating time to it when I spend so much time on other things right now. But I should come and go with you sometime.
Yeah, it's good times. So maybe this summer we'll get out
a
couple times. So, all right, Tyler, should we get into the topic here?
Yeah, let's get into topic. We have kind of a broader topic. We have a question that was submitted to us. And we're going to read it, but then we're going to use that question to broaden it out to maybe even a little bit more general kind of a topic today.
Yeah. So should we start with the question and then broaden out from there?
Let's read the question first.
Okay. So it says, how can a couple handle slips, relapses in a healthy way? My husband is in recovery and honest, as far as I know, about his slips and relapses. When he tells me about a slip or relapse, it hurts because it feels like he chose that over connection with me. So it creates disconnection for me. How can we work through these situations in a healthy manner? So great question.
It's a great question. I want to, before we move into the broader topic here, I want to actually just say that you can hear inside of this question, there's an actual recovery happening here. You can hear the both and of, you know, this wife who's saying, hey, I want to be healthy. I realize that recovery is a process. It also devastates me, and it's hard for me to reach in and connect and be supportive when he does have a slip, even though he's being honest about it. And so that's that struggle, right? Like, I want to be effective in my response, but I also am having real actual emotions. How do we navigate all of that?
Right. So I think this is actually a more complicated discussion than we think. And if I can explain a little bit, when we first started getting trained in this, Tyler, you know, I was working under a crazy therapist, as we all know. The program I was under, a couple would come in, and the whole recovery process was focused around this couple, and they would be given definitions about slip, relapse, lust hits, those types of things, right? And then they were also given a definition about sobriety and what sobriety is. And then they were given this system, and it was expected that they adhered to the system of what it was for disclosure around those things and how that went down, right? From my experience, I saw very little couples build trust because of this and the way this was given to them. So in their therapy groups with their therapists, and I did some of this for a while because I was trained this way. This is how it goes. This is what it is. This is what you do. And it actually was problematic in some ways. So back to her question about how do you handle relapses and slips, the old me would have
there's a protocol.
Very strict protocol, knowing exactly what it is, and we could list exactly how it is supposed to go down for them. I don't do that anymore. I don't do it that way anymore. I do something else, which I think is far, far better, but I don't do it that way anymore.
Yeah, it's interesting because, Brandon, I think we as human beings, we scramble over everything, not just in recovery, like a broader concept. We scramble for certainty in every area of life.
Yeah.
Faith is really hard to just have faith these days because everybody wants there to be certainty. We want to have a recipe of exactly do this, then do this, then do this, then do this, then do this. And then you end up at this end result of complete joy and happiness and blissfulness, right? And we all want that. We're trying to stabilize the ground under feet that's continually moving throughout our whole lives. And a lot of times the greatest joy we find is when we just accept that the ground shifts sometimes, even when we're doing everything right. And we can accept that. So in a certain sense, people who are really hurting when they come through the door, they want to have that, what you laid out for them, Brandon. Okay, this is a slip, this is a relapse, this is this, and this is the discussion you have for each one of those things. Voila, you're all better.
Yep.
The problem is that the recipes that have been laid out, and this is set forth by you as a therapist, by me as a therapist, we want that. Yeah. We want to do that too for our clients. If we could figure out,
give them that certainty,
a perfect certainty, that would be awesome. Would love to do that. The hard part is that because people are different and there's different experience and there's different values and there's different personalities and there's different situations, that the recipe doesn't always work for everybody.
Yeah.
Right. Yep. In some ways, the recipe you were describing was probably even less effective for more people than it was effective for people.
Yep. Yep.
Because it was reinforcing things like rigidity, and it was reinforcing things like, you know, punitiveness and control and lots of other principles that actually don't lend themselves very well to the process of recovery.
It actually undermines recovery, and it undermines my ability to build trust with my partner or rebuild trust with my partner. So think about it this way, Tyler. You know, let's say you and I are in a relationship and we go to this thing because there's been betrayal, and they say trust and honesty are really important to rebuild, or honesty is really important to rebuild trust. So you need to adhere to this specific system exactly as it is. Boom, here you go. And then I'm like, well, I'm back in my mind, I'm thinking some of those things don't really sound right, or they don't work for me, or it's not how it is for me. It's a little different than that. And they come back with, you need to be humble and adhere, knock it off, and follow the system.
Right.
And so I try to be a good boy to follow the system and do the best that I possibly can. I'm trying to at least act like I'm within this system as best that I can, because that's the way that I rebuild trust. That's not showing up in honesty and authenticity in the relationship. So it's a disguise. It's like, here, let's give you this system that is going to help you to rebuild the trust, but it's actually undermining you actually rebuilding trust in the relationship. So I don't know if I'm explaining that very well.
Yeah, I think you are. Let me take another stab at it here. I look at it from of course, from a dialectical perspective, the both and part of it, all right? So on one hand, it's like, I'm not going to do anything. I do it my way. That never works in recovery, because we've shown where we end up when we do it all by ourselves. Uh-huh. Or I step over and I can become completely compliant, and I just do the perfect recipe that was lined out for me, but I do it without a heart that's willing. I do it without the principles that are in the middle. Either one of those becomes an ineffective way to try to work a recovery.
Do it out of fear and compliance.
Yeah, it's done out of fear. It's done out of compliance. It's done out of this like promise of, you know, the form of denial of compliance is really, really insidious, because I go through all the motions of what I'm told to do. And then when it doesn't work because my heart's not in it, now I get to blame the program that I was actually doing.
Right. You know? Right. Yeah.
So I can stay in perpetual victim mode. And somewhere between those two places of I do it all my own way and I follow this perfect recipe, what's in the middle is what I think actually really matters. There does need to be some level of structure, but there needs to be room for growth. There needs to be growth mindset. There needs to be the ability to experience, the ability to choose, the ability to own your own choices. And then there's a set of principles. And I would say the principles, generally speaking, are pretty good guidelines, and they're pretty good bedrock for this a solid recovery, even though the logistics of the of how to instill those principles might look a little different for each person.
Okay, what you said at the end is important. It might look a little different for each person. So now we're getting those principles. I want to come back to what those principles are. But now what you just said at the end there, you're kind of leading toward it's not so black and white.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And I'm perpetually amazed by my clients as I work with them, because there is a general thing. So I'll give an example of this. I think we talked about this in a previous episode about going skiing and the 15-foot rule and like needing that space. And you're going to take your space naturally if people start to infringe upon your 15 feet, because you want to stay safe and you want to do your thing, right?
Right.
I think by and large, that principle is a solid principle that is true for most people in most situations in recovery.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then occasionally I get like a client, I just had one a couple of years ago, who I'm looking at the whole picture of their relationship, and I'm seeing he is totally lying. He's completely still acting out. He's manipulating, he's gaslighting. She knows it. And I'm teaching her, hey, protect your values. You know, take your space. This may end up in a divorce because it doesn't look like he's serious about working all of this. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da. You know, I'm lining it all out. Like, you should protect yourself. And instead, she's in the car one day and she has a conversation with God. And God's like, you need to go to him and tell him that you love him and that you forgive him for all of his terrible behaviors. And then she goes to him and she sits down with him. She's like, I'm not planning on leaving you. I love you. I forgive you. I'm going to figure out how to be happy regardless of what choices you begin to make, but I'm surrendering your addiction and I'm just going to live in the relationship that we currently have. That's backwards in my brain.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and yet in that situation, her offering of grace was one of the things that actually started to turn things around in their entire relationship. When she surrendered his addiction, but stayed in the relationship and offered grace and could truly do that with her own heart, like that's backwards. That's not right. How it works for most people, but in their situation, it's working.
Right.
Right.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm not going to, if they come to therapy, I'm rarely going to say, what you should do is go home and do everything that woman just did.
Right.
Right. I'd be setting her up for getting burned more.
But she followed her gut, stepped into her truth, which is different than what you would prescribe to her, and it actually created some good
for them.
Mm-hmm.
But at the core, going back to that dialectic, is that she was taking my end of the spectrum. She was also looking at the other end of the spectrum, and she found what was right for her in the middle of, I'm going to value my relationship. I'm going to value forgiveness. I'm going to value honesty. I'm going to value my own work to find peace inside of myself. And I'm going to offer grace. Now, she decided to do that. That was still her choice to live her principles.
Right.
Right.
Okay. Let me ask you this. Just an example here. So a couple who's, let's just say there was some porn use in the past, no major infidelity, just some acting out pornography. And they decide that together they are good with, they decide that watching rated R shows is good. In recovery, should you or should you not watch rated R shows?
Well, it's a good question. So the question is, it's back to the principles, right? So Generally speaking, what would the principles say about that? You probably don't want to put yourself in a risky situation where you're going to have to do more extra work on your addiction than you need to.
Right.
And you're right. So yeah, I mean, you're probably not going to recommend to them that they go home and institute watching R-rated movies in their marriage, right?
Right. I the bigger principle though to me is on is that honesty piece.
That's it.
Right? So it's like what is worse, Tyler? Okay. The therapist and my spouse said I can't watch rated R shows. So what I'm going to do is watch rated R shows and then lie about it. Or watch rated R shows, feel a ton of shame about it, and then report back to them about how horrible I am and how I relapsed and blah 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 blah, right? Versus at the get-go, like, look, I'm okay with watching rated R shows and I'm going to continue to do that. That okay, and let's say the spouse is like, well, I'm okay, actually okay with it too. So like, what's the problem, right?
At that point, there about point there isn't a problem, right?
That's what I'm saying. But if you're prescribed, if it's a really rigid system, and a lot of times religion even plays into this, religion or the therapy program or whatever it is, if it's a really rigid system that comes in and says, this is the system, certainty, boom, here's your certainty, bam. It's very important. And this is what a lot of couples don't understand. In rebuilding the trust process, it's very important you do that work together with your partner in an authentic way. So, if, like, let's talk about infidelity. I think, not infidelity, let's talk about being faithful. Okay. So, my relationship with my wife about what being faithful is and our understanding of what being faithful is probably will be different than what your understanding is with your wife, Tyler, about what being faithful is. We're actually probably pretty darn similar because we're brothers and we have very similar worldviews. But the point is me and my wife will work that out together and come to some understandings and come to some commitments together about what that means, what our fidelity in our marriage actually is. You see what I'm saying?
What you're getting at is it's the working out of those things with two people being honest that is actually its own
That's the
intervention.
beauty. That's the beauty. And that's where trust exists, is let's come together. Okay, what is a relapse? What is a, let's talk together about what that is for us, for both of us.
Yeah.
And let's be very honest, even if it's uncomfortable, even if it's real. Like, I had a guy who would masturbate every once a month, and he did it for 10 years. And he's like, yeah, I masturbate once a month. And I, you know, and finally I just said to him, like, hey, instead of acting like you don't want to, you've done it for 10 years. Go to your wife and be honest with her that you're going to and that you want to. And then have that conversation with her instead of acting like you're trying to be a good boy and fall. Have that conversation with her and then have a real conversation
Right.
about
But
where
in
it's
order for
at.
him to do that, he has to accept whatever she might do in return. And that's where people won't be honest, is that if he's deathly afraid she's going to leave him, then he'd rather promise something that he doesn't really mean in order to keep the relationship and take that, consequence or punishment every month when he relapses, rather than going to her and saying, "Hey, this is me. This is what I'm going to do." And she might go, "Well, that doesn't work for me. Good luck to you."
Right.
Right? He has to be willing to take that potential consequence when he does that. But the honesty is still worth it, because without that honesty, you can't really have what you want anyway in the relationship.
Right. That's where I get so, you know, and I know we always get emails about this every time I bring it up, but that thing about, like, you know, I'm not attracted to any other women, right? And when I bring up that everybody's attracted to multiple people sexually, and that's the reality of it. And so when we talk about honesty in a relationship, like if you come to your partner and you're like, the day I said I do, I only had eyes for you. And that's all I've ever noticed my entire life. That's probably being dishonest. You're trying to fall into a system of the way that it should be. And you're probably not being honest, right? So to be able to come back to your spouse and say who you actually are. Maybe you're attracted to other people all the time. Maybe just a little bit. Maybe whatever it is. But to actually own who you actually are, and then for them to come back and say, "Oh, that's how this affects me." You know, this, wow, my own trauma, like that really triggers me big time, and that's really hard for me. Or oh, interesting, huh? Like you thought she was beautiful, I thought she was beautiful too. That didn't bother me at all. Right. And within that relationship, you navigate that and you get to know each other as to who you are as sexual beings.
It's, yeah. I mean, you're bringing up a good point. I'm thinking of, you know, back to the question that we read to begin with. She asked this question, and what we heard her say is, my husband is in recovery. He's being honest as far as I know, and it feels that way. When he tells me it hurts, I want to choose our relationship, and I see that the process is being worked, but it does hurt me and it creates disconnection for me. Uh-huh. What you're saying is that when there's a relapse in this couple's relationship, she should be able to bring that honesty to him while also acknowledging that she sees the process happening. Like it's both, right? She's saying, yeah. Hey, yeah. When you relapse, I naturally withdraw. I take my 15 feet of space. It doesn't feel good to me. I don't feel safe in the relationship. It doesn't mean I don't care about you, and it doesn't mean I don't see you doing your work. But when you relapse, that's naturally going to be the case for me.
Yep. It's, you know, if right? I extend, if I get to be honest and open in the relationship, then I should extend that to my partner to be able to be honest and open with me. And so if I'm honest about something that I did or whatever, and then she gets to be honest back, and I want to honor that. And I want to have that type of relationship where we both get to show up real in the relationship.
And the beautiful thing about that is that when there's honesty on both sides of it, you very quickly come to the conclusion as to what level or depth your relationship is going to go to in terms of intimacy with one another.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Like and I'm saying that's the beauty of it, because now we don't have to drag on a relationship expecting it to be something it's never going to be because there's not honesty.
Right.
Right. It would be better for me, like if I'm trying to get into business with somebody and they're like, this is how I do business. And I go, oh, that doesn't work for me. I'd way rather have that conversation and that tension up front than to try to go into it and expect things to change over time and have a terrible business relationship.
Yep.
Right.
Yep. But let's say you got into that relationship and didn't have that conversation up front. What you would need to do is go back and say, hey, we need to have some conversations. Like we need to set this right.
Yeah.
The systems that we're under right now, where I'm trying to please you and I'm trying to do it right, like that,
they're not working.
We need to change it. You need to understand a couple of things.
I haven't been fair to you. I wasn't honest with you.
Wasn't honest with you from the get-go. You know, I'm thinking of the guy that I met with years ago, and his wife had told him that every time he looked at a billboard, it was a relapse. Any billboard. It was you don't get to look at billboards as you drive down the freeway. That's a relapse. And so he comes into my office and he's like, I'm just so weak, trying to be a good boy, trying to do the best he can for her and try not to look at these billboards on the freeway. What does he need to do?
Well, in this situation, if I'm in his shoes, I need to go and have a conversation and say, I know that billboards are triggering for you. That's not something I'm going to sign up for. Like, I'm going to drive the car. I'm going to see a billboard.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's going to be my work to do, and I'm going to keep doing my work, and I value doing that work, but I can't promise that I'm not ever going to see a billboard.
Right. So like, in many ways, a lot of people think, well, to build safety for her and all of this, you would just try not to look at billboards and try to show her that that's... But you got to come back to the original conversation. he betrays himself when he says, okay, I won't look at billboards for you, and I'll consider that a relapse if I do. That's not honesty on his part.
Right.
And so he can have a ton of empathy for her trigger and her trauma and why that's hard for her and all of those things, and still say, I can't, that I'm not going to call that one a relapse. That's not a relapse for me.
Right. Now, there's another side to that, though, too. And this is the tricky part, Brandon, is that if he uses what we're saying, we use this example, and then in the back of his mind, he's like, man, I can't wait to drive through Las Vegas so I can look at all the billboards and get all that stuff. But I was honest about it. Like, he's also not being honest with himself about his own recovery if he's using it as a form of denial to justify behaviors that aren't effective for him.
Absolutely. Both are true.
So we're saying what you're saying is at the core of all of this is actual internal and external honesty
and integrity.
Yeah. It's personal integrity. So if I'm, and this is what's hard, is sometimes when I'm in denial, I don't know that I'm in denial. So what it looks like is I'm setting a boundary, but I'm protecting something that's actually maybe not helpful for me.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, it's like, yeah, if I'm in denial and I'm like, yeah, billboards aren't a big deal, or, you know, like, let's go back to your R-rated movie thing. It's like, watching a nude scene here and there isn't a big deal, but in the back of my mind, I know that that is going to turn on some things for me and remind me of my old addiction. I'm not being honest either if I then justify doing that.
Well, okay. This is interesting because I had a client who was working at a strip club. And he was working at a strip club, and he was like a little belligerent about it. And he's to his wife, he's like, hey, I make money. It's my job. I have to go there. And if, what do you know? She didn't love that he was working at a strip
Shocker.
Club. Shocker. Yeah. Now, it seems pretty obvious that this isn't a great environment for a recovering sex addict, right?
Right.
Is that good for him to work at that strip club or not? What do you think?
I mean, if you look at 90% of the situations, you'd say that's not a good idea to work there.
Right. So it seems black and white.
Yeah, it's pretty clear.
Right. Like, the answer lies within him, between him and God. Like, really. So we can't install denial in there that says, it's me, God, and all this denial, all this justification and not acting. God is truth. If you're being completely honest with yourself and completely truthful with yourself, maybe God is telling you to work at that strip club for some reason. Maybe God came down and said, work at the strip club.
I hear many dudes with addictions just loving what you're saying right now.
If that's Brandon. The case, work at the darn strip club. And is fear there? Is denial there? Are all these other reasons there pushing you to say that's my truth? And I think it really is important to know, what is that truth? What is that gut feel? What you're going to feel peace. You're going to feel confidence. You're going to feel alignment and connection to God when you step into truth. And if you don't know that, and you're making those decisions, and then you're throwing it back at your partner and you're saying, sorry, that's my truth. You're actually doing more damage
with defensiveness and all that other stuff.
Right. But right. My point being, Tyler, it's not so black and white. Sometimes you look at some things and it's like, that is the, like you said earlier, your example, like that's the complete opposite thing to do. Yet it was the right thing to do for that couple and for that woman in her recovery.
What I think you're getting at, Brandon, is the principle. And I can hear just people being triggered all over the place with what you just said.
Well, they need to understand the principle.
But I think the principle, let me make sure I clarify what I'm, the principle that I'm hearing you try to say.
Damage control me, Tyler.
is at the end of the day, we as human beings have to be the ones to do the hard work to make our own choices. And we should be making those choices with curiosity based on our values and trying to stand in the truth.
Yes.
And if our ego is in the way, we might justify certain things and say it's our truth when in reality we were not acting in truth.
Right.
But at the end of the day, every one of us wants to be with a person who is willing to do the hard work to take a look at things and make a choice on their own, not because they were compelled to,
yes,
towards the truth.
Yes.
That's what, yes, you're saying.
And if you take that, what you just said, and if a couple like this couple, this woman that asked this question, comes together with that together, and they both say, I'm going to be willing to be totally honest with you, then let's work from there together. How can all of our truths and all of our needs get met, even if they're somewhat different? How can we, and I use this word negotiate, I mean, and I mean it in all the positive ways. How can we work together so that I can respect you, love you, but I can show up honest with you and create this safety and trust with you in a relationship?
Yeah, I hear in the question that she submitted, you can hear her, like, they as a couple are actually really, they're in the messy middle of this process. Go ahead.
Well, the short answer to her, like, is stay the course. I hate to say that, but in many ways, it is painful, and the chances of relapse are high. No, it doesn't mean it has to happen. But when it does happen, if he's showing up honest and empathetic and like those things, then stay the course, and hopefully these relapses will be less and less.
Right. I think she's reading it right. You know, when he tells me about a slipper relapse, it hurts because it feels like he chooses that connection over connection with me. In the moment, yeah, he's doing that, he probably is, whether he's intentionally doing it or
not. And that hurts.
And that does hurt. And that's valid. But she's also saying he's in recovery and being honest. And so what I hear her saying, she's arguing with herself, saying, well, should I just be supportive and tell him it's okay and go get her, champ? Or should I be honest with my feelings and say it still hurts? It's both. Still devastating, right?
Both.
And when you say stay the course, what you're saying is it's a both and.
Mm-hmm.
It's, hey, I still feel like there's progress happening. I see effort. I see honesty. I see humility. I see transparency. I feel this feeling of recovery. And that's important. And I still have to take space when this happens. And I hate that. It hurts. Like, I don't like taking space, but I have to do that because my gut tells me that I need some time and space away.
Absolutely.
And it does feel like you're choosing connection with those things over me. And that's probably true. Yeah. All of that is true. And so when you say stay the course, you're saying she's doing a good job here. Like, as painful as it is, she's actually finding the middle ground.
He is too. Like, and not saying that, you know, acting out is fine or whatever, but he is too doing a good job. And as this couple engages in this process right here in the messy middle, their overall relationship is going to be strengthened because they're going to work through some hard things together. They're going to trust each other more. They're going to know that they can be honest, even in the hardest of things. And it's going to support them long term. So I'm not saying him relapsing is going to support them, but working through this as whatever comes up in the future.
Yeah, I think this is something that's really difficult to find in recovery because things are so, so emotionally charged. And here's, I'll paint the picture. This happens with other things too. You know, try to have a discussion with somebody in politics or somebody religion-wise that you disagree with. Very few people can master this skill, and recovery is the same way because there's so much emotion charged on both sides. Is that the people who are the most effective, they learn the skill of hearing and holding the perspective of another person without taking it personally, finding the kernel of truth in what that person said to what your perspective is, while also holding your perspective and saying, I see it differently. Like, oh, I see that you feel, I have a really hard time with this when it comes to certain things politically, Brown, and you know me. Like, I know that you could get me started on things.
Don't, like, please.
And I'm not going to. I've actually tried to do the work where I've gone in and over a specific topic, I'll go to the other side's perspective and I will listen and I'll read and I'll try to figure out how could this be their best response. And if I can find a little piece or a sliver of truth or a principle or something that's driving them, there's at least a level of understanding that then makes it not have to be so confrontational.
Yeah.
And then it's like, okay, I can see you value this, 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 this. And the way you go about trying to protect those values is through this policy that is asinine. Yeah. Right. but the values are there. I can see the values. Right?
You're trying.
Yeah. You know, it's like, okay, I may not agree with the way that you go about trying to protect those values. That's maybe the point that we're different, but I can see the values. And when I look at my own values, I actually most often value the same kinds of things.
Right.
I just choose to go about protecting them in these ways too. Right. Which you think is asinine.
Right.
And so it's like, okay, so we at least have some common ground and there is space. There is actually space for both of us.
Yes.
Now, where I go wrong is either there's no space for you or I won't keep my own space. I'll give up all of my space.
Yep.
Either one of those options actually erodes the relationship.
Well, and Tyler, the very nature of intimate relationship is learning how to navigate that space. It's incredible the way God designed it. Like, everybody has their own uniqueness. For example, everyone has their own unique libido. So a couple has to come together and say, this is where I'm at. This is where you're at. So how do we navigate this together as your unique self is coming to the table and my unique self is coming to the table? I can try to navigate it with dishonesty and manipulation and force and control and fear and all this garbage. Or I can navigate this in the way that you just described. I can try to see you. I can try to understand you. I can show up as me. And I can understand myself and what my truths are first and foremost before I just blurt out whatever. Like, I can show up authentic and real, and we can negotiate and compromise and understand and hear each other and then work together. And it's beautiful and it's hard. It's really hard.
It goes back to, you know, that saying mom used to always tell us when we were kids after fighting with each other, we have to sit on the couch and stare at each other until we came up with a plan. It was always like, you don't do this and I won't do that. Okay, we're done. Like, you know, but mom would come and be like, you know, seek first to understand, then to be understood. Like, you know, and it's like actually that saying is, oh, it's true. And most of the time we say it to say, seek first to understand, but we leave off that then be understood, but actually both are important.
Yes.
Seek understanding and teach. Be understood. Like, don't give up your values. It's both, right?
But we need both. Seeking to be understood is not laying down the hammer and, you know, just attacking the other person with your truth. Mm-hmm. It's you know, learning how to communicate effectively about who you are. And so that they have a chance to understand you, even on the hottest of topics.
I heard a perspective about that I really liked a few weeks ago, you know, that said that when you're trying to talk with somebody and share your point of view, most of us try to share our point of view. And when somebody doesn't understand, we say, they just don't get it, or they're stupid, or they'll never understand. And what I heard in this topic, this thing that I was listening to was to... When you're in a situation like that, you should actually turn it on yourself and say, you need to become a better teacher. Like,
oh, interesting.
Yeah. So you're obviously not conveying it properly and this person isn't understanding it. It means you're a bad teacher. You better figure out how to teach better.
Right? Don't tell me that. Just don't tell me that.
but what that does,
I don't want that accountability on me.
Well, what that does is it actually does give possibility then, because now I'm not trapped with just like, oh, that person is ignorant and stupid. It's like,
that's awesome.
I've got to figure out a different way to help get my point across or to teach this thing or to share my perspective, which by nature forces me to have to wrestle with my own perspectives and really come to an understanding of what I believe, what I mean. It actually helps me with my own process to try to become a better teacher.
That's so awesome, because I think about, like, let's say I had to have a hard conversation with you. I would approach that conversation with you, not in a manipulative way at all, but I'd approach it differently than I would approach that conversation with Rex or with Lindsay. So these are other siblings, or Casey. Like, I'd approach that conversation differently. Why?
Because of the nature of our relationship, our personalities are different, our values are different. Yeah,
I know you, and so I want to be effective in communicating with you versus one of them. But I would still be honest. I would still try to be heard, and I would still try to listen at the same time.
Right.
And so with our spouses, you know, if you go to a therapy office or a religion or whatever, and they say, this is exactly what you do and how you do it with them. Boom. They don't know that. They don't really answer to that. You guys get to uncover the answer to that with each other. And in that work together, as you communicate honestly and authentically together, being heard and hearing at the same time, that's where the beauty of that like trust and intimacy starts to take place.
Right. And I think if we were to kind of boil it down to really succinct back to the whole topic we were talking about today, is that there are, you don't want to get lost basically just like the Pharisees and the Sadducees in every jot and tittle of the law and miss the whole bigger picture. You also probably need some level of structure. And somewhere in the middle is a set of principles that have truth to them. The principles of honesty, integrity, transparency, accountability, empathy, whatever your value system is what has to drive the way that you choose to live your life. And if you want to follow some of the guidelines that are reinforcing those principles, by all means, use those for those purposes. So it's like, you know, for one last example, bottom lines or lines of defense, Brannon. These are ways I'm going to protect myself from not acting out, or these are ways I'm going to protect myself from going into the fear cycle or whatever else it is. If I only set the line because I was told to set the line, I missed it, because what a line of defense is actually based on is principle. It's based on honesty. It's based on accountability. It's based on connection. It's based on mindfulness. If I'm using the tool that is the logistical part of the program I'm in with those principles in mind, then that tool is extremely valuable. If I only do the tool because I was told to do the tool, but I don't get the principles behind it, then it's useless.
Yes. Yep.
Right.
Yep. That's it. It's been a good discussion, Tyler.
Yeah.
I think that recovery being complex, it's both complex and so simple at the same time. But I think it being complex is a good thing. This is a learning process, is what it's about. It's a growth process. So understanding these more kind of complex principles and then practicing these things is going to help you grow.
That's right. The complexity is in the growth-minded process because it isn't cut and dry.
Yeah, it's not cut and dry.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
So I appreciate the person that asked this question. It led to a bigger discussion. If you guys have more questions about this, or we've just confused you more today, then come on our show. Help us help you, and we can hopefully explain some of these things better. So really appreciate you. And until next time,
keep on keeping on.